Emergency room visits are skyrocketing from the use of dangerous energy drinks. Are you next in line, suffering from fatigue, tiredness, or seeking peak performance?
Real energy.
Real. My fatigue was obliterated with a groundbreaking new product called Alter Rush. I feel the rush, and the best part is I've got real energy for peak performance. Alter Rush cracked the code to energy. Recently published studies show that ingredients found together only in Alter Rush increased energy an average of 45% in patients with chronic fatigue, and athletes experienced a 40% increase in stamina. Now that's energy. Visit AlterRush.com, AlterRush.com, AlterRush.com. Free trial samples are available for a limited time. Get moving again with Alter Rush, AlterRush.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. Not intended to treat, diagnose, prevent, or cure disease. Results may vary.
Hey, y'all, are you looking for Corolla? Some chocolate superfood with organic vanilla. Food-based vitamins keep you a healthy fella. Use your wife's credit card, don't even have to dollar. Go to Natural News Store, that's what it's there for. Get your superfoods, herbs, and a lot more. Feel young like you did before, and let Mother Nature's medicine work it like it's there for. I know you care for your health, therefore. Don't eat those GMOs, throw them out the back door. Don't stay poor with your diet if it's killing you. Enjoy your life with nutrition that's filling you. We got freeze-dried fruit that's organic. Super clean, superfoods, best on the planet. Blueberry, strawberry, keep them pomegranate. Yeah, it's ready to ship, and if you buy it, you can have it. Yeah, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Check out store.naturalnews.com for all your organic supplements and superfoods. Or call 888-959-6415. That's 888-959-6415 to order now. Coconut, maca, spirulina, goji berry, superfood protein.
Hi, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I've created a non-electric self-watering food production system that grows nutritious food with almost no effort and at very little cost. It's called the Food Rising Mini Farm Grow Box, and the best part is I show you how to make your own in do-it-yourself videos on the new website foodrising.org. There, you'll also find freely downloadable 3D object files that you can use to print the key components of the system on your own 3D printer. It's all part of the open source revolution, where we freely share good ideas that empower people to be more self-reliant and practical in a world that's increasingly unpredictable. This Food Rising Grow system will produce food for you even if the power grid fails, because it has no pumps and no complex moving parts. Join the Food Rising Revolution now at www.foodrising.org.
Welcome to another edition of Homegrown Health. I'm your host, Joni Abbott, on naturalnewsradio.com. Big show today, big announcements, breaking news. You don't want to miss this hour-long show. It's going to go by quickly, so let me start by saying this. Today, we release the name and the campaign, the Indiegogo campaign, for the documentary and follow-up film that I'm so humbly and proudly a part of, just honored to be a part of this work on the microbiome, microbiology, everything that I feel makes our health what it is, everything that science is picking up on with our health regarding vaginal birth and the microbes on our skin inside and out, these little bugs that make us 90% microbe and only 10% human. I am proud to announce to you today a probiotic life. That is the follow-up film to microbirth.com and the documentary that I spent time filming in April for, when Tony and Alex, the directors and filmmakers, and their little daughter Willow came to the States to film microbiologists and scientists and Amish. And that's all I'm going to say right now about a probiotic life. You can go to Indiegogo.com and look up a probiotic life. Please, 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 if you feel so led to donate to this campaign so we can raise the money to finish this film and release it to you by spring 2016. Please feel free to donate, and I would really appreciate it if you would ask your friends and family to make a donation as well. We can't do this film without you, so we need your help, your support, and your donations in order to make a probiotic life available to everyone worldwide. And that way you learn how to nurture your microbiome that will only increase your health and add to who you are as a 90% microbe and 10% human. Trust me, you don't want to miss this film. Watch the trailer at Indiegogo and on our Facebook page, A Probiotic Life, and the website is aprobioticlife.com. Moving right along, did you see the news breaking, the breaking JAMA study that I posted at Homegrown Health on our Facebook page? If you haven't, you can look at that now while you're listening to this broadcast. But joining me now, and if you have never heard of this organization, I cannot encourage you enough to go to Facebook and like them. It's Nurses Against Mandatory Vaccination or Mandatory Vaccines, NAMV. Michelle Rauten is on the phone with me and here to talk about a new study that JAMA just published about extremely low birth weight babies and the vaccination rate and the effects that it has on them. Michelle, God bless you for everything you're doing. I'm telling you, you have spoken out on the Alex Jones Show. You're continuously being vocal and speaking out against everything that has to do with vaccines, in particular, preemie babies and the side effects you see. What are some of the side effects that you can share with us that you've seen working in the hospitals with babies?
Well, I've been talking about this for a couple of months now more openly, and it was interesting that I brought this up on the Alex Jones Show and then had several more interviews talking about how these premature infants are vaccinated, quote, on time, meaning they are 2 months of age. However, many of them technically are still supposed to be in their mother's womb. And we will see things like increased apnea and bradycardia, which is when an infant forgets to breathe and drops their heart rate. And of course, these are premature babies. They're not supposed to be breathing on their own yet, and they have immature nervous systems, so it is normal for them to have some A's and B's, as they call them. But we definitely see an increased incidence after vaccination. We see increased incidence of illness or acting out and doing certain things that we watch for that tip us off that a baby may be coming ill, increased respiratory support, decreased toleration of feeds, inability to feed by mouth when maybe they had been working on that and doing okay with it and progressing before, and different things like that.
Oh my gosh. And I was a preemie baby, and that just hits home to me. You know, there are a lot of unknowns that I have in my own life, but I start thinking about the fact that their immune systems are barely starting to even function on their own if they were born vaginally. For the ones born C-section, chances are their immune systems haven't even been seeded yet. How do these babies even survive vaccination? Sometimes I'm just in awe of the fact that they're still with us.
You have a very good point. There is a lot of information out there that I don't go into detail for because it becomes very technical, but these babies really don't have very good immune systems. And you're very right that when you're inside the womb, your gut is sterile, and on the way out of the vagina, you're supposed to take a big old gulp and be inoculated with mom's flora. And really, we're really finding out, and it's becoming more mainstream news, that your microbiome and your immune system resides in your gut. And so anytime you have a baby, whether they're term or they're preterm, that comes out via C-section, they're inoculated with skin flora instead of gut flora. So you do have a situation where you're set up, you know, even in term babies with C-sections, I see much more chronic illness, recurrent ear infections, eczema, and attention deficit and sensory delay, sensory processing disorder and developmental delay and things like that. So you take a premature infant, a lot of them really are C-section because they're emergent or whatever is going on, and they do not have a developed immune system. And what really bothers me being in the NICU area is these parents come in and they want to be involved with their baby. And they are very strictly instructed. These babies have no immune systems. They cannot fight off infection. They cannot fight off disease. If they catch things, it can become very serious incredibly quickly. And so you need to do this 3-minute scrub, and you can't touch your phone, and maybe you need to put this gown on, and you can't bring your stuff into the NICU. I mean, it's all these steps they have to go through. You know, oh, the baby's acting a little strange today, or doing this or that. I think we'll do a CBC and XYZ just to make sure there's nothing going on, because, you know, we need to know right away, because if we let it go too long, the baby could get really too sick or die, you know.
Right. But then they're going to inject the babies with everything that's in vaccine.
Exactly. So oh then your baby's 2 months old now, time for the 2-month immunizations. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard a parent say, but the baby's still supposed to be in my stomach.
Right.
So this seems a little weird. The baby's so small. The baby's only 3 or 4 pounds. And there's this coercive rhetoric that happens, and the parents give in, and they're vaccinated. And then I come back the next day, and mom's at the bedside, and she's upset, or she's crying, or she's very worried, because now the baby is doing these things that I mentioned in that list at the very beginning. And you can just see they're devastated. This
right.
is their baby. Now their baby is not acting well. And so I had talked about on the Alex Jones show that it really is just kind of, it's a thing that happens that nobody worries about. And sometimes it's joked about or it's just blown off. And I said, you know, I was sitting in a call room with providers who are all very intelligent, and they save lives, and they're good at what they do, and they're not being malicious, but there are conversations that happen like, oh, hey, this 25-weeker was so strong when he was born, he never actually had to be intubated and put on the vit. He had a less invasive respiratory support. Until he had his 2-month immunization, we had to intubate him last night. Oh, ha ha, wow, that's so embarrassing, he he he, and they kind of move on.
Oh my gosh. That's
or
just...
I have providers calling from the step-down unit for the convalescent kid. You know, they're not in that critical period, so that's really where you're going to see those shots being given usually, going, hey, I'm going to give these 4 babies their 2-month immunization. So I was just calling this weekend. I wanted to make sure you had 4 beds open, because, you know, they're probably going to act a fool, need to go over to level 3. I mean, they know, they can say, I know that this is going to happen. And so, you know, the community that pays attention is really watching about vaccines and wanting to see what's going on was incredibly shocked by my statements. I just had a shift. You know, I'm in a private practice now. I'm in functional medicine. I'm, you know, healing autistic kids and things like that now. But I covered a shift recently, and not 3 minutes into report from staff. This was a couple of days ago. Not 3 minutes in. Oh, this baby, and he was this many weeks, and this is how old he is now. And he was just having apnea and bradycardia, and we had to go up on the vent, and then he was cold, and he wasn't tolerating his feeds, and we did the septic workup, and we started all these antibiotics, and we did x-rays, and we were just like, oh, what is wrong with this baby? This is so crazy. But then the next morning, Dr. So-and-so came back on call and said, oh, I gave that baby his 2-month immunizations, and we were like, oh.
Now you know. Yeah.
Now we know. That's what it is. So moving on, next baby. I mean, I'm just sitting there in complete shock going, so that makes it okay that this baby is that sick? Why is that okay?
Right.
So,
and I always want to know, why are those of us who question what's in the vaccines or question how each child or question how each person would respond to a vaccine, knowing that this is what's happening with babies, they try to paint us like we're quacks, and we're making observations.
Right.
And they're the same observations that they make in the hospital, but yet because we don't have MD behind our name, somehow us as the parents are the quacks for that.
So this discovery of this article,
yeah,
this study, in JAMA. It was discovered by me yesterday.
How did you have access to that? Because when you got a hold of me, you're like, I am so mad. And I was like, no kidding.
You know what's so funny is I have access to all the studies. That's just kind of like a perk of being credentialed and having privileges at hospital. I mean, they really give providers that kind of access. Oddly enough, Colleen Harding from Project Socrates got a hold of it first, and that's how I figured it out, because to be honest with you, a lot of times medical groups will kind of do journal clubs, and so you wait for the whole quarter to be over, and then everybody splits up, and they pull all the studies, and you go to dinner, and you go around the table, and you kind of have a timer, and we talk about the different studies. So it kind of becomes this thing where you're kind of only looking in like March, June, you know what I'm saying? You're only looking every quarter. And so I would have come across it eventually, but Colleen Harding from Project Socrates, she got a hold of it. And I've been on her radio show, and so that's how I figured it out. And I was fit to be tied last night. I couldn't sleep. I was so angry from reading this study.
Well, let's go over that a little bit. Yeah, what the study is and what you found.
So what this is this is looking at extremely low birth weight infants, and that's infants that are 28 weeks gestation or less at birth, or 1,000 grams or less at birth. From January 1st, 2007 to December 31st, 2012, it involved 348 NICUs managed by Pediatrics with an X medical group that is basically the largest neonatology provider corporation in the nation.
Wow, wow. So they purposely did the study, yeah.
A data warehouse. They have a data warehouse, a virtual online data warehouse, and so you can pull all sorts of information, and so that's how they're getting 348 NICUs worth of information. So this is looking at 13,926 infants.
Wow. Huh.
That's nothing to sneeze at.
No, not at all. No, that's I can't believe that now we're getting studies that large.
Right. In that patient population, that would be the company that could pull that off, because it's all there.
Right.
It's all saved. It's online. They have researchers. They have access, things like that. And so I'm just looking at the results of these almost 14,000 infants. 91% received three or more immunizations. Incidence of sepsis. So sepsis is like a blood infection. Okay. So what they're looking at is how many of these babies had a septic workup, meaning they had blood draws and probably urine obtained. And anytime you do a septic workup like that on a premature infant, you automatically start antibiotics.
Oh, no.
Because some of these kids, if they're sick and you wait 48 hours for a blood culture to come back, they could be really sick or dead by the time you got that back. So when you do a septic workup, they're poked, they have blood drawn, they're probably catheterized for urine. Other things might be going on, and they start on antibiotics.
Oh,
so
my
it's
gosh.
Not a benign thing.
Oh,
so they were looking at how, you know, when you look at these kids in the pre-immunization period compared to the post-immunization period, how many of those kids before they had their shots had septic workups, and how many after? So what I found interesting was really they looked at 3 days before and 3 days after for all of their outcomes. But they also looked at 30 days before and 30 days after. So for their septic workups, they went from 5.4 per 1,000 patient days, which is something we do in medicine, okay?
Okay.
Post-immunization period went to 19.3 per 1,000 patient days. So that's 3.5 times higher. So really what that tells you is you have these kids that are acting very unstable, that they're giving those clues that we're always looking for, whether they're immunized or not, saying, hey, this kid might have an infection, whether that's apnea and bradycardia, temperature instability, feeding intolerance, needing higher respiratory support, things like that. There's all sorts of things that go on. The other thing they looked at is increased respiratory support. So that might be a baby that was on no oxygen, that is on some oxygen, or a baby that was on a non-invasive oxygen and having to go up on support. And those went from 6.6 per 1,000 patient days, and then they get vaccinated and it goes to 14 per 1,000 patient days.
So it's a little over twice
so
as many.
So that's two times higher, basically. And the other thing was how many of these babies had to be intubated, meaning invasive, they have a breathing tube put down, they go on a vent in this time period. Yes, I mean, this is big stuff.
And these are thousands of babies we're talking about, or hundreds of babies.
Right, 14, almost 14,000 babies.
Oh, my gosh. And out of those 14,000, out of every 1,000, how many ever children had this reaction in the percentile?
Right. Well, it's 1,000 patient days. It's something weird that we do. It's like,
okay.
it makes no sense to anyone that's not in the medical field. Like, if you have a central line and you're looking at how often do these central lines on this floor get infected, it's always per 1,000 line days. Like, just focus on the front end number. It's just something that they do.
Yeah.
So intubation went from 2 per 1,000 patient days to 3.6.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's kind of, you know, 1.8 times higher. So I'm looking at this going, exactly. This is exactly what I've been saying.
Right.
Fantastic. Thank you. Like, this could not be better timing, because I was just blowing the world up about this in the last month or two. What is shocking to me is their conclusion. Their conclusion basically says, our findings provide no evidence to suggest that physicians should not use combination vaccines in extremely low birth weight infants.
Well, that was my next question to you. Which vaccines were being given? Were they just hepatitis B, or was it the combo shots? Because I know that the manufacturers don't even make singular anymore, that they stopped making just the measles, just the mumps, just the rubella, for instance. So using that as an example, a lot of them are combo.
What they're looking at is the vaccines. Some people were using the single shots, like, were they getting a Hep B, a Hib, a polio, a DTaP separately? Or were they getting, you know, I call it the five-way, but, you know, were they getting Pentacell, Pediarix, all those sorts of things that are, like, the big combo shots?
Right. Well, so, and given there's no safety or efficacy study on any of them.
Right. And then they're just saying, we couldn't see a difference between when you give them separately or when you give them over 72 hours instead of all in one day. So just keep giving them. I mean, a big part of this paper is, hey, studies show that starting vaccines in the hospital makes a much higher incidence that they're continued, so that the kids get more vaccines during life. In that, it seems like there's this phenomenon called, you know, a healthy vaccine child.
Right.
I have to look at what they say. Hold on. I have
okay.
to use this.
No worries.
I have to use this exact
terminology.
Phrase.
Yeah.
So basically they're saying the so-called healthy vaccinated effect, that's word for word, the so-called healthy vaccinated effect by which physicians wait until infants are more stable to immunize, thus reducing the observed incidence of pre-immunization adverse events and biasing the incidence rate ratios upwards. And then they go on to say that immunization delay burdens an already fragile patient population with the increased morbidity and mortality of vaccine-preventable diseases through the first year of life. I mean, they're so on this track that Lord knows how many man hours it took to gather all this data and put it together, and they still can't see what they're saying. And so something that I want to point out is in the end, and that's, they didn't even say this in the abstract, they also looked at death. They looked at seizures and death, and there wasn't really any much data on seizures. But there were 5 deaths in the post-immunization period, 3 days after immunization. Hmm. Okay. 2 of them, there was no diagnosis related to the death in the chart, which is shocking to me, because how do you do a death note? You don't have a diagnosis about what it was that was going on when the baby died, which means they're probably just like, wow, that was crazy. I have no idea how that happened.
Right. Right, because it can't be the vaccines, no matter what. It can never be the vaccines.
Be the vaccine, so I don't know what happened. I don't know. So one was a bowel perforation, a spontaneous bowel perforation. The baby died. One was necrotizing enterocolitis, where sections of the bowel start dying. They get infected and start dying. And one was a pneumonia and respiratory failure. The interesting thing I found was that they didn't mention about deaths. Remember how I said, we're looking at 3 days before and 3 days after.
Yes.
But we're also going to look at 30 days before and 30 days after. They did not give any data on deaths for the 30-day period.
I bet. Because
I want to know what that is. I mean, I have questions. I have big questions. I think that these people that wrote this study need to be embarrassed. I think that the company whose data warehouse this came out of needs to be horrified and embarrassed.
Yes.
I think that Duke University, who the lead investigator works for, needs to be horrified that this is what this study says. And there's things missing. And why are they missing?
Right, because after 3 days, let's say a child gets pneumonia, and then they have the complications due to the pneumonia, and they die 5 days, or they die 10 days after.
Right.
2 weeks after.
I have questions. I want to know.
Yeah.
I want to know why you couldn't say, and there were no deaths between day 3 and day 30. How come you didn't say that?
Right.
I guess it's possible it didn't occur to you, since many things didn't occur to you while you're writing this study. But what people don't even realize is the nurse's chart and their own chart. And then what makes it out of that chart and into the doctor's note is based on the person doing that note.
Right. So it's whatever the doctor wants to interpret as data worth documenting in his notes out of the nurse's chart. But the nurse's chart has the actual story, let's say.
That is absolutely correct. And so I can look at a chart and see a number of A's and B's and go, wow, you know, I think that's really significant. And then another provider can come right behind me and look at another chart, the same chart, and go, eh. And it could be, eh, he had his shots yesterday, so yeah, he's going to do that. I'm not even going to bother putting that in here.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
I mean, that's the attitude that's happening. And so if I'm getting a 3.5 times sepsis eval, that's a pretty good number, because they're putting in the chart, this person had a CBC, this person had a blood culture, this person started on bank and gent, you know, all those sorts of things.
Yeah.
If you're intubated, you're intubated. But when you're looking at that increase of respiratory support or increase of apnea, bradycardia, or they did have some temperature instability during that 24-hour period. I mean, it is possible that the provider just went, oh, here's a normal temp. I'm just going to say he was 98 degrees, because you only have to put in one in your chart. Or, he got vaccinated, so I don't even need to write these A's and B's down, because you know why.
Yeah, because it's not possible. Right, right. Like, it's just like another day at the office for them, that these children are suffering and having these adverse health events, and yet they still refuse to say or even think that, maybe it was because of the vaccine I gave them yesterday.
Right. And they, like I said, these conversations happen, and when they realize it, it's not a big deal. It's just a given. So now I have a study with almost 14,000 kids in it, and within 3 days, you have a 0.0003 chance of dying from your vaccines. Yet, you know, whatever my ratio was, I figured out when people were freaking out about the measles, I was like, you have a 6% chance of catching the measles and nobody died.
Right.
That's six zeros.
Right. So you have a greater chance.
I'm supposed to be really, really dead set on it's 2 months and it's time to do these immunizations because this paper is saying there really is no reason to delay them. And we shouldn't be looking for that so-called healthy vaccinated child effect. And it doesn't matter if it's a combo vaccine or not. We just need to get it done. And by the way, you have a 0.0003 chance of dying. Really, it's 0.00036. So we'll say 0.0004 chance of dying 3 days after those shots. But we're all doing this because we're freaking out about the measles.
Right.
That you have a 0.00006% chance of catching, and in the last decade, a 0% chance of dying from in this country.
Right. Right.
I don't understand how you read this. I'm afraid they're all going to go to Journal Club and go, hey, JAMA, June 2015, adverse events after routine immunization of extremely low birth weight infants. Provided that there's no evidence to use single vaccines, and we can just go ahead and keep using the combo ones. And
right.
Everyone goes, okay.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep. Next.
Yep. Next in line, line up and roll up your sleeve. The desensitization in doctors. Studies like this seem to be just glanced over like it's the Daily Sunday paper and they are telling you the weather's just fine. To me, that's like the goggles they're looking through when this study comes across. Now, what was your waking up moment, Michelle? I want to know a little bit more about you and how Nurses Against Mandatory Vaccines got started, what your waking point was after working in this environment for so long, and then what your credentials are too.
Well, I have a master's of science in nursing, and I am board certified as a neonatal nurse practitioner. I also have a specialty certification in neonatal and pediatric transport.
Okay.
So I also am now a functional medicine specialist, and I have hundreds and hundreds of hours in training on that.
Okay.
So yeah.
Thank you.
I study a lot.
Thank you for doing what you do, because obviously it is paying off in the realm of how you care for your patients.
Right. So I actually had a profound autoimmune disease after the Hep B series while I was in college and undergrad. That changed my life, and mostly for the worst, if you look at it one way, but for the better in that. This is what I get to do now, and it's way more fun and way more rewarding. And so that's really was the turning point for me was I'm really, really, really sick, and nobody knows what's wrong with me. And I've been to 9 doctors, and I am 5'10", and I weigh between 112 and 118 pounds, and I walk around all day trying not to throw up, you know, that sort of thing. You know, first you find one doctor that was he's still the smartest person I've ever met in my life. You know, internal medicine turned homeopathist when he went, this is ridiculous what we're doing. And it just kind of went from there. So when Nurses Against Mandatory Vaccines was being started, I immediately jumped and applied to the president that was starting it to be a board member because I wanted to be involved. And Nurses Against Mandatory Vaccines, really our stance is all about vaccines being required to hold employment.
Right.
So a lot of people don't realize that all of the staff in the hospital, they now want everyone to have a flu shot to keep their jobs. The flu shot that was between 16 and 19% effective last year.
Right, yeah, the strains that don't even
have the highest compensation for adverse events out of any other vaccine. And so that's really what we look at. We actually don't really get involved in childhood vaccines because there are plenty of organizations that do that. We're really about informed consent and the fact that you have an entire, you know, a patient walks in off the street, and they're supposed to have autonomy and dignity, and they're supposed to have informed consent, and they're supposed to make decisions about their care, and then they are now walking into a building full of people who've had that right stripped from them. It's a very slippery slope. And so that's really what we focus on. I just am in the NICU in the peds area, and so when stuff like this comes out, I get very passionate and I want to talk about it anyways.
Yeah.
So,
good. Well,
you know, as a disclaimer, Nurses Against Mandatory Vaccines is about vaccines for employment for healthcare workers. And this is more of a childhood vaccine issue. And so this is really kind of my personal topic also.
Right. Well, and I thank you for speaking out, because someone of your caliber who has these credentials, who have access to, you know, the NICU units and the baby wards, and I could go on and on about NICU outside of the vaccine issue, right? About what goes on there sometimes, that bothers me from a mama standpoint or a parental rights standpoint. But the vaccination issue with babies who are underdeveloped in their immune system is shocking, because if doctors are going to treat babies who are already born immunocompromised this way and disregard their reactions, how much more of a fighting chance don't normal, quote unquote, healthy babies have who have a vaccine reaction then?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I see it. I think I probably, because once you're seen as a provider that really is thinking and functioning outside of the box, and just when that patient walks in the door as a new patient, I'm just gathering as many details as humanly possible, usually for 30 minutes to an hour, probably more like 45 minutes averagely, all the way back to, were we a C-section or a vaginal birth?
Right.
Did we have reflux, colic, food allergy, truncal rash? Did we have eczema? Did we have chronic ear infection? You know, like every single thing that I can pick out for that patient up until the point we are right now to get to the core of what's wrong with them. I do have a lot of those type of kids coming to me, but it's like, here is my child, and here she is with a giant full head of hair, and here she is 3 days after her DTaP with her hair falling out, and here she is completely bald 2 weeks later, and my doctor is saying, true, unrelated, this is a coincidence. And I'm like, this is not a coincidence, this is autoimmune alopecia, and we need to fix this.
Oh my gosh, autoimmune alopecia.
I mean, yes.
I mean,
what these parents are up against is horrible. Why can't, the further we get away from what really is the cause or what really is the problem with why we have this disease or illness, but really it's a symptom, the body sending up a flare going, hey, I'm having a problem. The farther you get away from paying attention to what that core is, the harder it is to fix that person, and you will never heal that person if you can't be honest about where it started.
Right. Right. And not only that, but to dismiss the parents' initial observations of their child who they're with 24 hours a day and 7 days a week, especially when they're infants. They have observations and insights into their behavioral cues and things that they do normally every day, their bowel movements, their diapers, what they're eating, how they're sleeping. And when that schedule gets thrown off, your mama bear instantly says, wait a minute, something's wrong with my kid, and I don't know what that is yet, but I got to find out.
Absolutely.
This seems like a pretty good stopping point, Michelle. I've got to take a quick break. More with Michelle when we return on this fascinating, intriguing, outraging JAMA article and study that has showcased adverse events and vaccine injury in extremely low birth weight babies. But it's like they're admitting it. We'll talk with Michelle more and more on her observations when we return. This is Homegrown Health, where you're encouraged to take charge of your health and healing all from home on naturalnewsradio.com. We'll be right back.
Emergency room visits are skyrocketing from the use of dangerous energy drinks. Are you next in line, suffering from fatigue, tiredness, or seeking peak performance? Real energy. Real. My fatigue was obliterated with a groundbreaking new product called Ultra Rush. I feel the rush, and the best part is I've got real energy for peak performance. Ultra Rush cracked the code to energy. Recently published studies show that ingredients found together only in UltraRush increased energy an average of 45% in patients with chronic fatigue, and athletes experienced a 40% increase in stamina. Now that's energy. Visit UltraRush.com, UltraRush.com, A-L-T-E-R-Rush.com. Free trial samples are available for a limited time. Get moving again with UltraRush, A-L-T-E-R-Rush.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. Not intended to treat, diagnose, prevent, or cure disease. Results may vary.
Hey, y'all, are you looking for Chlorella? Some chocolate superfood with organic vanilla. Food-based vitamins keep you a healthy fella. Use your wife's credit card, don't even have to tell her. Go to Natural News Store, that's what it's there for. Get your superfoods, herbs, and a lot more. Feel young like you did before. And let Mother Nature's medicine work it like it's there for. I know you care for your health, therefore. Don't eat those GMOs, throw them out the back door. Don't stay poor with the diet if it's killing you. Enjoy your life with nutrition that's filling you. We got freeze-dried fruit that's organic. Super clean, superfoods, best on the planet. Blueberry, strawberry, even pomegranate. Yeah, it's ready to ship. And if you buy it, you can have it. Yeah, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Check out store.naturalnews.com for all your organic supplements and superfoods. Or call 888-959-6415. That's 888-959-6415 to order now. Coconut, maca, spirulina, goji berry, superfood protein.
Hi, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I've created a non-electric self-watering food production system that grows nutritious food with almost no effort and at very little cost. It's called the Food Rising Mini Farm Growbox, and the best part is I show you how to make your own in do-it-yourself videos on the new website foodrising.org. There, you'll also find freely downloadable 3D object files that you can use to print the key components of the system on your own 3D printer. It's all part of the open source revolution, where we freely share good ideas that empower people to be more self-reliant and practical in a world that's increasingly unpredictable. This Food Rising Grow system will produce food for you even if the power grid fails, because it has no pumps and no complex moving parts. Join the Food Rising Revolution now at www.foodrising.org.
Welcome back to Homegrown Health on naturalnewsradio.com. How you doing? I'm your host, Joni Abbott. Intriguing hour so far. We've been talking with Michelle Rauten from Nurses Against Mandatory Vaccination about observations that she's made as a neonatal nurse herself in the responses of NICU babies after vaccination, the kind of medical emergencies that happen, the kind of medical interventions that are needed. And I'm just blown away by this JAMA study that she shared with us here today. Isn't it true that less than 1% of vaccine injuries or adverse events is actually reported? I think it's we probably have a worse chance now that it's blown up in the media as it has over the last few years.
That's right. I mean, even the CDC states we're at a 1% report. If you want to get really, really lenient, like you want to say, I really want to make sure I'm covering how many are getting reported, you could say 10%, you're way going to overshoot.
Yeah.
But even if it was 10%, you still have 90%. And that one I talked about with the autoimmune alopecia, after that doctor that was, that shot was given under his care, he downright refused to report it.
I
you know, that's the first thing I did.
Now, here's another thing I don't appreciate, how nurses are treated in the medical institution, and that is if it's under the doctor's care, and correct me if I'm wrong, if it's under the doctor's orders that the baby be vaccinated, that the nurse and the one who's actually administering the vaccines are the ones that could be held liable or responsible for that baby if anything happens.
There's, when it comes to nursing, I mean, in an office situation like that, it's different. What you're dealing with, say you're working in the NICU and you're the nurse.
Okay.
Basically, they're saying nurses are very smart and they're extremely well trained, and they are supposed to anticipate what their orders are supposed to be.
Okay.
So if A is happening and B is the appropriate order, and this doctor orders Q, you're supposed to go, hey, I'm pretty sure we're supposed to be all the way back here at B. This doesn't seem right. if you just start blindly following doctor's orders and they're ridiculous, yes, that does fall on you. And I think that that can be bad sometimes, because you have somebody with all this training and you have a very well-trained, intelligent nurse, and so there are going to be things they don't know. But I think also it's good because you're requiring they're that last stopgap for that patient safety. Like, is this the right thing to do? Is it the right patient? Is it the right time? What is this for? Is this an appropriate treatment? And if you don't understand, you need to be able to go back to the doctor and go, I really don't understand why we're doing this.
Right.
And then that's something else the nurse deals with. If you're dealing with, I'm a big jerk doctor that's rude and telling them they're stupid, you know, that's a whole different dynamic. That's
right.
A problem in nursing.
Right.
Clearly, I never had that problem. And if somebody was yelling at me, I was screaming right back at them until we had an understanding that that wasn't going to happen. You know,
not I love you for that, Michelle.
Personality.
Yeah.
Well, I think about all the wasted man hours, energy, and the amount of money alone spent on intubating the babies and having to rush them to a different, you know, this reminds me a lot of what we see that goes on in birth when they start giving more pit, then the baby goes into distress and then they have to wheel them into C-section. And then it just creates this cascade of events that lead up to a much larger intervention and a much larger health crisis. This is so reflective in how they're treating the NICU babies with this JAMA study and what they're just putting out there for the whole world to see. I feel like they pulled their pants down and mooned us in this study.
I seriously feel the same way.
Thank you. I know my analogies are different. But
you are.
Yeah. Yeah, they're mooning us, and they don't know that their pants have fallen down below their crack. You know, I know that is so, like, raunchy way to say it, but
I tell you, you know, I'm always walking the line. Like, I like what I do. I love what I do now. I enjoyed being in the NICU the other day, you know. But at the same time, you know, when I said 3 minutes into report that conversation was happening, I thought, oh, my God, like, really? I can't make it 3 minutes without me wanting to throw something at someone, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like I feel like I'm walking this line, and this study came out, and I said, I don't care. Pull my privileges. Like, this is jaw-droppingly disgusting is what it is. And everyone involved should be completely embarrassed. And everyone that looks at this and looks at the conclusion and goes along with it without thinking needs to be embarrassed. All of you should be embarrassed. This is just, I probably am not going to sleep again tonight because I'm still that revved up about it.
How can this be a game changer, Michelle? How can we use this to launch change or to bring awareness?
This is what I think about when I think about change in the NICU. I think about delayed cord clamping.
Yes.
The reason we have delayed cord clamping back, and the reason people are doing these studies on delayed cord clamping, that of course are coming out with fantastically awesome results, because shocking, you give the baby their own blood and they do better. I know that's shocking.
Right, right. And stem cells, right, from the last transfusion,
yeah,
from the placenta.
Yeah, their own stem cells and their own blood and their own iron store. You know, I know this is shocking. But the reason all of that started, and this was probably 5 years ago, was because the parents showed up to L&D and said, I want delayed cord clamping for my baby. And they're throwing down, and we're going to have a problem, and dad's standing there bowed up, like, I will take you out if you clamp. I mean, they weren't hostile, but they kind of just were like, this is what's going to happen.
Right.
I was getting calls in my call room from the OBs going, I mean, is this okay? Is it okay with you? And I'm like, is it okay with me if the baby gets its own blood? I'm going to go with yes.
Yeah,
I'm okay with that.
Right.
And then here we go. And so it's like dissemination of information to empower people to go, hey, did you read this study about the my baby was 28 weeks, so I'm going to pass. I'm not going to sign those.
Wow.
I mean, I think that's the only way to wake them up. I don't know any other way. If they don't read this and feel like they have their pants down around their ankles for the whole world to see, then it's going to have to be the other side that changes it. And the other side is going to be the parents.
Right.
And I have said for the last however long that I think the greatest coup that's been pulled over on this country by Western medicine, backed by the billions and billions of dollars of Big Pharma, is the convincing of women as a whole group to ignore their maternal instincts.
Yes, I agree, Michelle. And you're currently expecting a baby and could not be any more in tune right now with your body and with those maternal instincts. I often say everything goes back to the lie that we've been sold that we cannot trust our bodies. And that begins really all the way back in puberty. And if we want to look at the integrity and the honor and the dignity of the situation, we could go back all the way to childhood. We could go back to infancy when we start ignoring our baby's cries and we start not teach our babies that they can trust us as parents, that when they communicate with us their needs, that we will be there to meet them. But I look at, when did we as humans, as children, learn to be so disconnected from our feelings, or that our parents and when did we learn that we can't trust the adults in our lives who we're communicating to the only way we know how as babies, and that is to cry? So when our basic needs emotionally and sometimes physically aren't met in babyhood, then that translates into childhood, where we've learned to accept the fact that our feelings don't matter and that we become disconnected with our bodies. Like we say, stop that crying. Stop that crying. You don't need to be crying for that reason, or whatever. And then it just cascades from there. Then we get taught as women that we need to go on birth control so our body can find its hormonal balance because we're moody. Then we go into adulthood. You know what I mean? Like, do you see what I'm saying? Like the whole cascade. And then we're on birth control, or then we have infertility now going on, and then we have to have infertility treatments, and then it's just like, it just never ends, and we become lifelong believers that we can't trust our own bodies.
Right. All the way down to, your uterus is giving you fits now that you're older. We'll just take it out.
Yep. Just yank it.
You
just
don't want to have a baby. Tubal ligation syndrome is probably one of the most horrible things a woman can deal with for the rest of her life.
Yes.
I agree with you. It never ends. And I when I have mom sitting at the bedside crying, and maybe that baby's still there, and they come back around 2 months later and they talk her into it again, I'm like, enough, ladies.
Yeah.
Enough.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
and we're the crazy women. I mean, I've been dealing with all the 19 vaccine bills that tried to come across in Texas, and we did a dang good job down here. I will let you know.
Yeehaw. Thank you very much. You guys did. I'm so proud of you.
We had a representative. The one thing that we couldn't get completely killed was the Gardasil, the HPV bill.
Yes.
But we had it written in that they couldn't make the HPV shot mandatory. And we're like, go chase your tails about the 7.8 people you're going to save by giving 2,300 adverse events. You go celebrate yourself. But it's not mandatory. And that's what we wanted. But the representative said something like, if I write this in here, will the women stop being so angry at me now? 2015. So now I'm in my office going, Dad, I need you to call.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm calling the professional athlete dads of my patients, as dumb as that is. Could you please call the representatives? Oh, yes, ma'am.
Because they think that the women... And isn't that so sexist, so damn sexist to sit there and think that we're the crazy women? To still in 2015 label that as like we just got knocked back into the late 1800s.
Well, you know what? I just keep thinking, you just keep pushing them. You think they're crazy now?
Yeah.
Publish more of this. publish more of this. You want to see crazy women. Just keep it up.
Well, I definitely plan on sharing it and stirring up the mamas and the papas, because anybody who's a parent should be very aware of this study and also very upset about this study. This thing that you and I are talking about with women and the history of all of that, you know that women were named hysterical because hysteria comes from the same root word as hysterectomy. Mm-hmm. They have a womb dis-ease. Women, even in the late 1800s and early 1900s, and probably before then, were so disconnected from their bodies, even sexually. I was shocked to discover that the male doctors of late 1800s and early 1900s, and probably before then, and Michelle, this is going to go way off topic, but they were masturbating the women to get them to have no more dis-ease in their womb. Labeling a woman crazy when really she was undersexed or underloved, probably both, and also disconnected from her own emotions, disconnected from her own ability, thanks to society and pressure and things that were only proper and rules written by other people, just completely became a diagnosable illness in the eyes of doctors. And so when our normal human emotions become a disease in the eyes of our healthcare providers, something's wrong.
There is something wrong, and I think there's something wrong that somebody bit my head off because they were crying, because their twins were crying, because they got poked 10 times each at their one-year appointment. And I said, I'm a provider that works in an office with one-year-olds that does well checks. You know, we do functional medicine, we do well checks. I can't even figure out what they were doing. Like, I couldn't even come up with 10 things to poke about.
Right.
And I'm a horrible person because that's what it takes that doctor to do to make sure that my baby is healthy, then that's what it takes. But they're sitting there crying about it while it's happening.
Ugh.
How are we so disconnected? I'm sorry, I was being appalled for your children.
Right, right.
It wasn't personal for you. I was actually appalled for them.
Oh,
and I felt sorry for you because you're crying, because you should be crying, because that's horrible.
This is just so many more conversations that we need to continue to have as women, and we need to continue to have as mothers, and we need to continue to have with our daughters more and more. But how do you make a shift in an unempathetic, unfeeling, institutionalized mentality?
I tell you, if this study doesn't wake them up, you know there are some physicians that are reading this and they're horrified and they're not going to say anything.
Right.
They're not. I mean, in my area, one of the most heinous vaccine-pushing pediatricians, you get one shot off, he will kick you right out of his office. He has his wife take his kid somewhere else so that his kid can get a delayed vaccine schedule.
Interesting.
This is what's going on. And so if this study doesn't make people go, wait a minute, these doctors and the providers and everyone go, wait a minute, it's going to have to come from the other side. It just is.
Right.
If this can't do it, I don't know what else can wake them up.
Right. This is coming from their own mouth. This is coming from their own studies, much like in the realm of vaccine choice and informed consent and medical freedoms. We all use the CDC reports to talk about this, to say it's your own data. And that's what, unfortunately, my gut feeling is that they're going to dismiss this JAMA study just like they do all the others. But while this topic is still so hot right now, I mean, Robert Kennedy Jr. needs this. All the autism communities need this. Every mm-hmm. single, you know, mothers against mandatory everything. Every mom's group needs this. Every thinking parent needs to have this. Thinking mom's revolution. Everybody who has been screaming this, the NVIC, Barbara Lowe Fisher. I mean, we've got to make sure that we make this information widely available to every person willing to read and understand exactly what it is that it's saying without manipulation, because they have a really great game at learning how to twist data and trying to make it say things that it's not saying.
Right. I mean, I think that's, I wrote a list of questions at the end of it. These are my questions, which I talked about some of them, but one of my questions is, I would love to know if truly this the outcome or the conclusion that you made was truly the question you were asking.
Right.
But I'm looking at this thinking, maybe it isn't. I don't think we'll ever know that, but I really wonder.
I'm just wondering how they were even, how they could not look at the study and go, we're actually going to publish this?
Right.
You know, like.
I love it. I'm going to use that, by the way, that they pulled their pants down and mooned us.
Oh, my God. It's the most crass way that I could say it, but it's just like, I mean, I'm, I know I have the craziest analogies. My kids are always saying, Mom, like, that doesn't even make sense to us. I'm like, honey, it will someday. It will someday. Don't worry. Don't see that my butt crack's hanging out. Don't tell the emperor that he's not wearing any clothes. Whatever you do, everything's fine. No, it's not fine. And we've been saying this for a really, really long time. And at some point, this tipping point has to be reached. This awareness has to be reached. And people have to wake up and start doing their own research, because God knows you're not being told the truth as evidenced in this study. Look at the conclusion. It's not like the conclusion says, wow, well, maybe we really need to stop doing this to, you know, extremely low birth weight babies. And maybe we need to delay vaccination. I mean, they don't even question it. They don't even question that maybe vaccination should be delayed until their immune system develops more. And thank you, Michelle, for doing this, because I fear about you being ostracized. I mean, I'm so glad you work in a practice with functional medicine where, you know, parents are coming to you for actual healing, and you can utilize the knowledge that you have and the experiences that you've had into, you know, that will give you clues into how to really start healing and taking care of the root causes instead of just, you know, treating symptoms. Thank you for being awake and doing that and going through your own healing journey. Or I don't know if you're healed yet or if you're still on that journey, but, you know, thank you for being brave enough to do that, because we need more of you, and you will be no doubt an encourager and a mentor to a lot of other nurses who want to speak out but maybe can't. So you're really on the forefront of helping that movement along too.
Yes, the last few days I thought, I feel like I need to make a public, you know, I need to make a disclaimer, like a public service announcement.
Yes.
Anything you say can and will be held against you in the court of public radio.
Yes.
So be really careful about the comments you make in front of me.
Right.
They're going to come out.
Right. Good.
And
yeah.
I'm not ashamed of that. You know, like, you guys need to be aware. This is not okay anymore. This is the thing that kills me. I'm just dumbfounded that how do you get such a large group of highly intelligent people to this spot?
And here's what blows my mind, that women are allowing, and this is what gets back to that question we had with, at what point do moms and women totally disconnect from their own bodies and from having empathy for other people? How can another woman sit back and watch another woman be birth raped? Or how can another woman dare sit back and watch a woman not have fully informed consent by the OB? How can another woman bully another woman? I could never do that to another woman.
I couldn't either.
We're all out of time on Homegrown Health. That went by pretty quickly, didn't it?
It did, yes. When I'm fired up, it goes by fast.
Thank you for being on Homegrown Health today.
You are very welcome. Thank you for having me on such short notice.
This has been Homegrown Health on naturalnewsradio.com, where you're encouraged to take charge of your health and healing all from home. And friend to Homegrown Health, Jeffrey Jackson, just love him. He has got a really great article on this JAMA study as well. So make sure you check him out at Jeffrey Jackson, JeffreyJaxen.com. Have a wonderful day.